Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. Are you still in Florida with Ian churning around the countryside?
No, I missed Ian. You know, I did talk with I've been traveling around. In fact, I was in Tennessee last week. A lot of fun. I'd never been to Gatlinburg before, but it's a great tourist town. Half the town is like Ripley's, believe it or not, museums and things, and it was lots of fun. So I've enjoyed the hurricane from afar, and we can only pray that the next one doesn't hit the East Coast. Or it doesn't hit anybody, that it just dies before it gets to continental U.S.
Now, they always say, with a hurricane, get to high ground. Is there any high ground to get to in Florida?
Well, you know, there is. It's a relative thing. Everybody, so much is at sea level. But my trading partner he bought a home in Naples, and he turned around, sold it in 13 months because he had an offer for more than twice what he paid for it. So he said that the person who used to look in on his house when he wasn't down in Florida said that the water level was up 10 feet right at the doorstep of this house, and anything below the doorstep, the garage and some other things were flooded. But he moved, when he sold the house, he moved to a third story condo. So there is a high ground, really, but it has to be, on stilts.
Right, so concrete. Also, I remember watching tornado coverage with friends from Miami, and they said, oh, there's no such thing as a tornado-proof home. And they said, our home is. The walls are 2.5 feet thick, and we have steel shutters for the windows. Florida gets loads of tornadoes connected to the hurricanes that roll through. Yeah, you can build a tornado-proof house. We had a tornado. The only thing wrecked were the rose bushes or something. So you can build it, but it's, you know.
No, you can't. You know, I grew up in Margate, New Jersey. It's one of the barrier islands off South Jersey. And I've seen some pretty big storms come through. And they're building them strong, the homes stronger and stronger, like Category 5 spec. But even then, you do see homes where the concrete and steel infrastructure is still there, but the whole place has been gutted by water and sand. So, you know, if you're living right on the beach on some of these barrier islands, you're kidding yourself to think that you're going to come out of it all right.
Yeah, all the land around you gets washed away, and then your house collapses.
Yeah. That's true. And, of course, if your neighbors haven't built to Category 5, specs, then you're not going to have neighbors either.
Now, just thinking of hurricanes, you're very familiar with them. What's the economic impact? I know things get shut down, but is there a kind of a boom afterwards? Lumber, steel, rebar, paint, things like
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You got to buy hurricanes. You know, someone mentioned that in my chat room yesterday. They said, hey, you know, it seems like the market always goes up when there's a hurricane. It's not going up now. I mean, I think there are more powerful economic forces that I guess supersede whatever effect you're going to get from hurricane rebuilding. And, but the rebuilding process may come at a time when the economy is desperately in need of that kind of activity.
Now, the market, as you said, forces beyond just that of a hurricane in effect right now. You were reluctant to declare a bear market, but is that declaration on now?
That's such a joke, you know. I mean, I was reluctant to tell my own perma-bear subscribers, hey, look, guys, just go for it. Any rally is a short sale. And I did, I took pains to document why. You know, I'm as perma-bearish. Nobody out-bears me, really. And I don't even want to go into the worst of what I see ahead. It's almost beyond imagining. It's things you don't even want to think about, that are part of a barter economy, which is where I think we're going. But even so, you know, I fleshed it out in technical terms the way a trader would. You know, I'm watching Apple go up, 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 up. And of course, Apple is the biggest cap stock on the planet. It's the heaviest stock. And yet I was describing the tactic that they used to levitate a $2.5 trillion, whatever it is, a $2.5 trillion company, without putting any money into the stock. It's a very beguiling tactic where you do it two ways. You short squeeze it overnight in very thin markets where there's little supply. Or if the conditions in the market are somewhat bearish, a little bit heavy, you drop the stock, you drop the bids, and you let the stock fall ahead of the opening, and the opening bell rings, and the shorts are all realizing that there's no supply. So they bid it up, and the stock opens on a gap. And when you gap a $2.5 trillion stock up 4 or 5 points, that's a lot of money, but it's not real money that's going into the stock. So lo and behold, you have enough of these phony rallies, and Apple is sitting within 3.7% of all-time highs. And of course, everybody takes their cue from Apple. It's the one stock that all the chimpanzees have put your hard-earned money into. They've never given it a thought, really. It's not like they're even smart, let alone geniuses. They haven't sold a share of Apple since 2009. So they just let it run up, and so many of the portfolio managers, they live by Apple. So you can bet that strategically that Apple's going to get the best of their criminal misdeeds and their tactics. So when you get Apple at that level within pitching wedge distance of record highs, you're at the point of creating a kind of a psychological turn in investors. They're thinking, geez, if Apple can do this, then it's going to pull the rest of the market along. And before you know it, the market is at such a height that people are, let's say, more bullish on the economy. They start spending, they start borrowing again. But anyway, long story short, we're no longer in that expansive mindset. We're on the down slope, and people are not only not full of confidence that whatever they buy, it's going to be selling at a higher price in 6 months. They're pretty sure that prices are going to come down. And that's why the housing market, particularly at the high end, is setting up for a very precipitous collapse.
Now, just saying on Apple, you had an interesting thing you told me before we turned on the microphone about your warning tip about Apple.
Oh, a few weeks ago, the company was out with a statement that hey, we're a little surprised ourselves, but iPhone sales, which is, you know, where Apple lives, are holding up pretty well, and you could not have asked for a clearer sign to just short the bejesus out of this stock whenever it rallies. You know, when a company makes that kind of announcement, when you know yourself that it's headed into disaster, you got to short the stock. So Apple has come down from that time in the mid-160s down to currently 142, and I think it's going way under 100. And the problem for the company is that its iPhone has never been through a really serious recession. And the normal thing that feeds iPhone sales, everybody wanting to replace their iPhone every 2.5 years just because the camera is improved, of course, never the battery, at that time, you could see that an absolute disaster was shaping up in one of its key markets, Europe. So Apple was about as safe a short sale as you could have imagined, and I think it's going a lot lower. That's why I track it very, very closely in my letter. In fact, we were actually buying Apple today at 142.85, which is the target of a very clear downtrending pattern. So we're just sort of buying it for a bounce, but I'm convinced that if you get Apple right, you get the stock market right.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, a year ago, people were willing to buy real estate at whatever ridiculous price was asked for. They were buying without pre-sale inspections and so on. What kind of environment is there now for real estate?
A very, very crucial turn has occurred. All right. Now, we know that there's been very little transaction volume or price discovery in the real estate market at all levels. We're talking about $300,000 homes, but particularly $2 million homes. You know, there's nothing trading out there. And what happened with the high end, you know, $1.5 million maybe and up, the sellers who by and large don't have mortgages and are in no urgent need of having to sell their homes, they were just sitting on them thinking, well, the buyers will come around. And the buyers are saying, well, sellers will come around. Maybe we can meet in the middle. Well, we've made a very crucial change from that state of mind. And now the buyers absolutely know that the prices of these, the expensive homes are going to come down pretty hard. They really expect a price decrease. So they're definitely not buying, especially in a 6% mortgage environment. So there's still no price discovery or transaction volume. But when you get just a few sellers at the margin, you're going to see the high end come down with like nothing that's ever happened in history. And I think the same factor will affect homes at lower price levels. There's not much supply out there and not much demand either, again, because, the sellers are going to be moving from 2% mortgage, 2.5% to 6% plus. So there's nothing going on there. But at the same time, the gulf is widening between buyers and sellers, and we all know that it's going to resolve, in favor of the buyers.
Gold, is it going to pick up from here on, or is it just going to stay the same as everything else falls?
Well, that's, I mentioned yesterday in my chat room, we were discussing gold, and someone said, do you think gold would take a big leap? And I think it could, relatively speaking, just by sitting still. You know, I was never on board for gold at $50,000 like some of my colleagues, or even 5,000 or 4,000. I'm a gold maybe 2,000 to 3,000 kind of guy in the best or worst of times. And I've always felt pretty confident that gold would hold its purchasing power relative to any other asset you can name. But that doesn't mean it's gonna rise. If it just sits still, currently trading the December COMEX is about a little bit below 1,700, and my downside target, not necessarily a given at this point, is 1497. That's my worst case. But if gold merely stays up, let's say above 1,000, and everything else is falling, it will take a relative leap in comparison to other investable assets.
Are you into lithium mania 2.0 or whatever number that they're assigning to it now?
Lithium. I accidentally had a lithium mania stock. This Chris Temple, a friend of mine who puts out a service very good on energy and resources, it's called the National Investor, he mentioned Frontier Lithium. So I bought some shares, and it went down initially, and I just kind of forgot about it. I didn't even know I had the shares. And then I inadvertently checked. I looked at a Litoff chart, LITOF is a symbol, and it had traded like up from 50 cents where I bought it to above $3 or somewhere in that vicinity. So I put in some offers and sold it. And I still think, the lithium story, it's a little bit involved, and I think that we've got a certified lithium expert in the chat room, and she said that you know, just there are substitutes for lithium being developed now that could change the game. So it's very much a story stock. It's not all about supply and demand. And I like every story stock, it's you pay your money and you take your chances.
Well, nothing seems to power innovation more than prices. So lithium's really expensive. What can we use? It's not lithium that does the same job, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, the technology is changing. I think within the next couple of years, Tesla's going to have a car. They're going to incorporate the battery into the structural elements of the car. In other words, the car and the frame, the chassis, are going to be battery elements. So that's pretty cool, and we're definitely making some progress there. Although not in the key area of, like, what are we going to use to generate the power that's going to charge up all these Teslas overnight?
Well, you know, back in the 1800s, early 1900s, every farm had its own windmill to pump water and sometimes generate power. The windmills are all gone. And if you live on a farm, it's a wide open expanse where the wind blows pretty freely. Are we going to start seeing more farms and other things like your own house, a little windmill there? It doesn't mean the wind blows all the time, but if you're charging batteries now and then, why not? More home kits to have your own little wind farm.
Interesting idea, you know. I guess they're not going to go for it in Martha's Vineyard, everybody having a windmill, but
again, the small ones here, we're not talking about the big industrial ones that kill flocks of geese. The little, 4 or 5 foot one that actually, if you paint it up, it looks very pretty when it's spinning.
Can disguise it as a birdhouse for condors.
In Paris, they actually have wind turbines. It looks like it's a tree with different colored leaves, like it's fall, but it turns out those leaves are all little turbines, and they power all the streetlights on that particular street. You don't have to make everything ugly. That's one thing in North America, England, we always equate industrial with ugly. It's got to be ugly if it's industrial. We can't make it look good. In Spain, they have factories that look like works of art, and it didn't cost any more. It's all in the design. If you design it that way originally, you can make something look good, and it can also be functional. You don't have to go.
Yeah, and when you see that in other countries, it's really disappointing that how America has lagged. Like when we build something that could be ugly if done wrong, that's kind of the way they go. So we've got a lot of ugly structures. I'm from ugly New Jersey, by the way, where the casinos came in and they didn't try to hide the parking lots. So, I guess we have sort of ingrained a certain frugality about public works, and we've cheaped out so much that all public buildings are pretty ugly these days, and it's a shame.
Well, take a look at subway design. New York or Toronto went for the cheapest, ugliest they could find. Montreal and Paris said, well, you know, for a little bit more money, we can make them works of art.
And you wonder if New York had sprung for a look, you know, a kind of designer look down underneath, whether it still would have received the same pasting and defecation that has plagued the New York system. You know, it's hard to imagine anything in New York not being covered with graffiti, underground certainly, in New York, and it might have been a waste of money.
Well, actually, you found that beautiful things don't get covered in graffiti because, in their own way, graffiti artists are trying to make it look better.
I was never fully on board with that theory, that we should coddle graffiti artists because some of the things they do are beautiful.
Well, what you do, a lot of cities now have designated graffiti zones. Go ahead, put all the graffiti you want in there. I'm not talking about tagging, which is just ugly spray-painted signatures or nicknames, usually something obscene, but the actual artists themselves. Banksy, there you go. There's nice-looking graffiti.
Yeah, and in Miami Art District, probably that's the biggest zone like that in the world, I think. And there are some amazing paintings down there, but you know, it's something to behold. But of course, it gives some of the inner city graffiti artists some bad ideas.
Well, I was thinking maybe instead of fining them or making them clean graffiti, send them to art school. If you're going to do it, learn how to do it right.
Or we could all become taggers and just sort of go along with it.
Oh, man, I hate them. I live in a beautiful neighborhood, and if I see one, the cops are there in 10 minutes. I have no tolerance for idiots.
Uh-huh.
Unless it was great-looking art, and I haven't seen any yet. Not in my neighborhood. Well, Rick, anything else that we should be keeping a close eye on besides graffiti?
I think that the surprise of this market is everybody thinks, well, it's a bear market, you know, and it will have occasional rallies. But I think that, the occasional thing is sort of it's foremost in their minds right now that any time we could have this giant rally. I think the surprise will be that we don't. And we are getting short squeezes. Like yesterday was... It was tempting to buy into it, you know, and even last night when I updated my forecast, I was really kind of, overbearing as far as this rally's a crock of feces, and it ain't going nowhere. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, boy, maybe you've taken, you stuck your neck out a little too far. So we're seeing the bear rallies, but they're not lasting for nearly as long as people are expecting. You know, yesterday, you had to end the day thinking, well, this is the beginning of something big, but all we can muster right now in the short squeeze department is rallies that last for just a single day. And the second ugly surprise, besides the rallies being much more short-lived than anybody expects, is that we ain't seen nothing yet, that the selling is going to pick up momentum. And, even though we've had a 1,000+ point down day in the Dow, I think we're going to see a down day of 6,000 to 8,000 points in the Dow, just to tune up expectations a little bit. So we're going to accelerate to the downside with less respite than even some of the old veterans are used to seeing in a bear market. And you know, as it all comes back to that what we were talking about earlier, we're on the down slope now. We're on the deflationary slope where people are thinking and expecting lower prices rather than the opposite.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.